The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with your host, the mother-daughter team of Dr. Gloria Horsley and Dr. Heidi Horsley. Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi have devoted their lives to helping individuals move forward after a profound loss and each week share stories of hope and understanding. They dedicate their show to their son and brother Scott and to others who have lost loved ones. Now join Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and share the journey from grief and loss to hope and renewal.
Welcome to our show today. I'm Dr. Gloria with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi.
Each week, Heidi and I invite you to join us and our inspirational guests as we discuss stories of loss, hope, and recovery. These shows are brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation, whose mission it is to promote healing after loss, and by listeners like you. We also invite you to join our Open to Hope family by visiting our websites, blogs, YouTube channel, where you'll find inspirational articles, poetry, and grieving tips to support you on your journey of hope, loss, and recovery. If you're listening to our Thursday live internet show, please feel free to email us or to join us on the show by calling 1-866-472-5792 with questions or comments regarding the losses in your life. These shows are all archived on our blog, griefblog.com, as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. And all shows can be downloaded on iTunes. Well, Heidi, good morning.
Good morning, Mom.
We've got a very interesting topic today and some great guests that have gone on to help people with hope and recovery. Our topic today is finding hope after suicide. And Heidi, you and I talked about it this morning, how, you know, when you say suicide, I've been talking to people that we were going to do a show about suicide and finding hope, and they just kind of take a breath in, you know, when you say it. What I wanted to talk to you all about today is about the fact that people do really take a breath in when we talk about suicide. And what we hope to do is talk about suicide out in a public forum and talk about the hope and recovery and what our wonderful guests have gone on to do. We're going to have Matt Kuntz on, who's the executive director of the National Association of Mental Illness, which is NAMI in Montana. I think he's spelled that. We'll talk to him about it.
And Mom, I'm back.
Oh, good. You're back.
Sorry about that. For some reason, I got disconnected. Right, a crucial moment in our conversation. But I'm here now.
Yeah, Matt and I had to try to figure out who was on the line. But I said that's bleeding edge. We're on the bleeding edge here, and we appreciate Voice America.
I mean, it's ironic because here you're talking about the stigma of suicide and how people like to avoid the topic, and all of a sudden I'm gone.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was just saying we're going to have Matt Kuntz on, and then we're going to have Joanne Harple and Dr. Paula Clayton. They're from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Heidi, I wanted you to talk a little bit about what's going on right now in the world of hope and recovery from suicide.
Yes, there's actually something very exciting on, and you all know that I teach at Columbia University, and on July 16th, Columbia University Medical Center announced the largest ever study of suicide in the military. They have just received funding along with Harvard Medical School and the University of Michigan and the Uniformed Services. They've received $50 million in funding, so $50 million from the U.S. Army, to do a five-year study looking at the risk factors for suicide and the protective factors. And this is really, really exciting because they're going to learn an incredible amount and get that information out there so that hopefully there'll be less suicide in the future.
That's great. Well, Heidi, would you also like to talk about the program that's going on tonight? For today, I guess.
Yes, it's actually right after the show, Mom. It's from 1 to 2, and there is a show on, and you can access it through the Internet, and I'll give you that website in a minute. It is called The War Within, Helping Returning Veterans, and it's from 1 to 2, and if you go to www.cadca.org, that's www.cadca.org, so CADCA.org, you can access the show and listen to it.
That's great, and they're also going to archive it. I saw that. So you'll
be
able to go on it after.
Wonderful.
So So that's a great thing. Well, Heidi, we have also written something about suicide with Eric Hipple. We wrote a book with Eric Hipple called Real Men Do Cry. You want to talk about that a little bit, Heidi? Because you went to, they gave him an award, the American Suicide Foundation, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. You were there at the awards, right?
They did. They gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award in 2008, and he also got an award from the American Psychological Association in 2006 for all the work that he's doing to build awareness for about suicide. His 15-year-old son died by suicide, so Eric has a lot of personal experience, and he now works at the University of Michigan as outreach coordinator, talking about signs of depression and what to look for and how to be proactive.
And a lot of those are in our book, The Real Men Do Cry. It's a great book because it's Eric's story, and it's a fascinating story and what he's gone on to do. And Heidi and I decided today we're going to start doing an email spot, and this is what we're going to offer you. If you would send us an email about what you've done for Hope and Recovery and what recommendations you would have to help others who've had a suicide in their life, shoot us an email. And we are going to pick one of the emails to read on the show next week. And we will send you a signed copy of our book, Real Men Do Cry, which, by the way, you can get on Amazon. Or you can go to our website and find it. And we will send you a signed copy of the book. And for those folks who aren't chosen to be the first, we will send you a free CD of our show. And by the way, on this CD is a wonderful spot by Reverend Ritter. We did a little cut, and we have some wonderful shows on hope and recovery and suicide on our show's archive, so you might want to take a look at that, too.
And Eric's book is really an inspiring story of tackling depression and surviving suicide loss and going on to find hope again. So I highly recommend it for everyone that's listening.
You want to read just a couple of the interventions that Eric recommends, because I think that will give them an idea of what they might want to talk about in their email.
Sure. He talks about actions to avert depression, and he talks about getting sleep, getting exercise, using light and color, trying meditation, yoga, mindfulness, and gratitude. And he's got so many great ideas in this book, and it's very user-friendly, and it's a very easy read.
And it's good for guys because, I don't know, did we mention that he was the quarterback for the Detroit Lions?
Right, he was the quarterback for the Detroit Lions for 10 years.
So anyway, we suggest that you take a look at that. Well, Heidi, let's move on to introduce our inspiring guest, Matt Koontz.
Very good, Mom. Like you said, our first guest is Matt Koontz, and our topic is finding hope after suicide. Matt is the executive director of the National Association of Mental Illness in Montana. He has a compelling life story as to why he is involved with NAMI. He's a former attorney whose stepbrother died by suicide following a tour of duty in Iraq. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thank you, Heidi.
Hi, Matt. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
So now, aren't you a graduate of West Point or something yourself?
Yes, I was.
Uh-huh. Now, tell us a little bit about your stepbrother.
Chris was a really sweet kid. He was about 7 years younger than me, and we grew up in the same house after our parents got married, and Chris joined the Montana National Guard a bit after 9/11, and then was deployed to Iraq, where he was a machine gunner on top of a Humvee. And,
wow.
He was really brave. He served his country.
Yeah, that sounds pretty incredible, doing that. Yeah,
it was during some of the worst times of the war. He was hit by an IED. I mean, there was lots of action, but he toughed it all out and then came home and began to struggle.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And you saw that, but I assume the family didn't know what to do. And
it was 2007, and there was really nothing out there. We didn't know what. Well, it was 2006 when it was really when the buildup was coming, and we just didn't know.
Now, was he having nightmares and all that?
Yeah. The thing is about PTSD is it's a progressive illness or post-traumatic stress injuries, and it compounded over the course of about a year, just got worse and worse.
Some people thought, oh, he'll get better and better, and it went the other way, huh?
Yeah, and I just didn't really understand the biological components. I didn't understand any of it. We tried to get him into treatment, but he was self-isolating, and our family didn't know what to do.
Well, probably part of it is that they don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, it's that, but it's deep. I mean, the self-isolating parts of post-traumatic stress injuries is just, it's probably the cruelest part because they move away from the people that they need most to get out of the hole.
So right when you need people, you're moving away. And what's interesting, Matt, is I just read a statistic from the RAND Corporation saying that 18.5% of military show signs of PTSD.
Yeah, and there's also, they said that one-third of the veterans that have checked in with into the VA since 2001 have shown signs of PTSD. So it's a major problem, and it ended up killing Chris.
Yeah. Now, are you still the executive director of Anami?
Yep.
Okay, so did you ever think you'd be doing this?
No, I was just in my law firm, just an associate attorney plugging away on corporate issues, and we lost him. And
now he shot himself, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and we were looking at some of the statistics. A lot of the suicides now, even with women, are with firearms.
Yeah, I was surprised at that when it said firearms are now the leading method of suicide among both men and women. I knew it was with men, but I thought women took pills more than used firearms.
It might be the leading successful
suicide. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how Eric Hipple that we worked with, that's how his 15-year-old son died. He shot himself. So really a tough deal. Well, it's time for us to go to break now, and when we come back from break, we want to talk with Matt Kuntz a little bit about his journey and what's happened with him. I noticed he's some of the things he's done was, I think, doing something with President Obama. So we want to talk about that, and we want to talk about NAMI and the services that's offering right now and the differences he's made in the military. And I have a feeling that some of these new studies that are going on are you know, part of the help of NAMI pushing them in that direction. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. You're listening to Healing the Grieving Heart. We're talking today about finding help after suicide. We would very like you to sign up for our newsletter. Go on the Open to Hope Foundation site and sign up for our newsletter, and also send us an email so you can get this free signed book from Heidi and I. Please stay tuned.
Sign up for Facebook as well.
Oh, yeah, sign up for Facebook as well. Please stay tuned for more.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
This is Dr. Heidi Horsley. Just a reminder that Healing the Grieving Heart Internet Radio
and thegriefblog.com are sponsored by the Open to Hope Foundation, a nonprofit web-based foundation whose mission is to help bereaved individuals cope with their pain and find hope in their future. My mom and I hope you will visit our foundation website at www.opentohope.com and become a part of our caring community.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us, we're here today with Matt Kuntz, the Executive Director of the National Association of Mental Illness, also known as NAMI, talking about finding hope after suicide. Welcome back to the show, Matt and Gloria.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, we were talking a little bit about Matt's brothers, the loss of his, is it stepbrother, Matt?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's Chris, right?
Yes.
A loss of Chris after, I mean, I could just see when you were talking about it, Chris sitting up on his Humvee with a, you know, as a gunner. I mean, he was a real guy, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
When he headed out there. Came back, got post-traumatic stress syndrome, and just started to proceed on a downhill road. And Matt was telling us at the time that he was an attorney. What was your specialty?
I did corporate law.
So he was there in corporate law, and that was your life, right?
Yeah, it was, but it's amazing how anger and sadness and the push for will push you towards advocacy.
Yeah, could you talk a little bit about the stigma of suicide? Or did you find it for yourself, or how were people?
It's just hard. I think everybody looks at it from different ways, but it's a real challenge. It's not quite like any other form of death that I've experienced. But I think it's also getting better.
How about the military? Is there a different take on it when they've been in the military, or did you find anything like that?
I think with particularly combat PTSD suicides, people were at the time were really struggling to try to put them into context and to figure out how someone would fight for their life every day for 18 months and then come back and choose to give it up a year later. It was really hard for people to put into context, and they didn't understand that there really was a post-traumatic stress injury that killed them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now tell us what's going on. I know you've been involved in trying to get the military to do something about it, right? And they are moving in that direction.
Yeah, we've actually had a lot of success. We started advocating in Montana, and Montana eventually developed the best program in the country for how to care for returning service men.
And now this is only 3 years, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've done a lot in 3 years, so continue on with what you're doing.
And then was recognized by President Obama at the time as this being a program that maybe we need to take nationwide, and we actually were just had the program put into the Defense Authorization Bill, and when that bill signed into law in the next couple weeks, it'll require every service member to have a face-to-face mental health screening before they go to war, after they come home, and then every 6 months for 2 years. This is based off the program that the Montana National Guard developed after Chris's death, and I believe that it's really going to save a lot of lives.
How fantastic, and a lot of crushed families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be so hard, and while we don't, like, I don't realistically think it will save everybody. The one thing is even for the ones that we lose, they'll know that our country did the best that it could to try to care for them. We reached out for them time and time again to see if they needed help. And
I mean, it's so wonderful, Matt. I'm just thinking of my father-in-law who's dead now. He died 5 years ago, but in Korea and in World War II, and he came back with all sorts of flashbacks and problems, and he self-medicated by drinking. And he said that the hardest thing about coming back was you came back and you were expected just to act normal, like you hadn't been through anything, and there was no one to talk to about it. So I love the stuff that you're putting in place for vets.
It's really simple in one way, but the other thing is it changes the whole mentality and it brings mental health up to the same focus and attention as physical health, and that's the only way that we're going to be able to get people the help that they need before their lives spin out of control.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's great. Well, talk to us a little bit about being, didn't you do something with Obama and ordinary people or something?
Well, I've been pretty fortunate. I was featured on during the inaugural train ride.
Uh-huh.
And then I was blessed again to be chosen by People Magazine, and Major League Baseball is one of the 30 everyday all-stars that they highlighted at the all-star game just a couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh. How amazing. Did you ever think that you'd ever be in this highlight, you know, in the spotlight, and also the pressure of knowing what you're doing?
You know, I really didn't ever think that I would be here. It's an interesting combination of high stakes pressure and also just low budget, grinding it out every day from a grassroots level. And as for the pressure, I just do the best that I can. I think that that's it.
You know, the interesting thing is to me is, Matt, that you will embrace all these things. You will embrace the All-Star thing, People Magazine, doing something with Obama, and you can do it because there's no ego in it. You know it's for a greater cause. It really is an amazing thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, it's all nice to have this and that, but it's only worth it if we can help people get the help that they need. Other than that, I'd probably just rather stay in Montana and
right.
let somebody else get the attention.
Yeah, well, tell folks how they can get in touch with you and with NAMI, and tell them a little bit about NAMI, because it's not just for returning vets.
It's a National Alliance on Mental Illness, and it's www.nami.org. And if you're in Montana, it's www.namimt.org. And what we do is we support, educate, and advocate for people with severe mental illnesses and their families. We've got a lot of great programs. I think especially if you've lost someone to suicide, NAMI's family-to-family program is the best program that I can imagine. Hopefully we get to you while you're struggling with your family member's severe mental illness, but I took it after the fact, and it really helped me understand why it happened, and kind of take some of the guilt and pain off of my shoulders. And if you want to volunteer, that's another thing that you can do, is we're always looking for people to teach these classes and help other families. I think the best way in the world to fight suicide is through education, and I invite your listeners to join the fight.
That's great. I would really like that, because Heidi and I always say, don't we, Heidi, that the first step, one of the early steps, not the, you know, the first step to recovery is just getting out of bed in the morning, but as things go along, reaching out seems to really work, doesn't it, Heidi?
Absolutely. Being of service will heal others as much as it'll heal yourself.
Yep. My husband and I do a compassionate friends group, and we have one of our members is from NAMI. His son died by suicide, and then his wife is also mentally ill, and He has been such an inspiration to our group because the wisdom he brings and the information from NAMI, and he always keeps us informed on what they're doing, and it's just, he's a great guy. So, well, Matt, we want to thank you for everything you've done, and we wondered if you had any pieces of advice that you'd like to give to our audience out there on hope and recovery.
Yeah, I guess my only piece of advice is use the strength and the clarity and the anger that losing someone gives you. It was something that I started, and Chris, wasn't the first time I lost someone, but it's taken me to Uganda to work with AIDS orphans and in our community and out of the national level. And I think that after you lose someone, you have such a clarity of how to make the world better once the grief and the anger ebbs a little bit. You use that because, well, it's a horrible gift to get. You got it.
Thank you, Matt. That was a wonderful way to close the show and go on to our next segment. We want to thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's time for our break, and we want to thank Matt Coons. And again, we're going to continue talking about finding hope after suicide, and our next guest will be Joanne Harple and Dr. Paula Clayton of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. We would like you to send some emails on your thoughts on recovery and hope for suicide to inspire those people who come to our site. If you'll send us some emails, we'll send you a free book, Real Men Do Cry, about Eric Kippel and the loss of his son and his hope in recovery. Also, we will send you some CDs to the people who, if we don't select their email. You can reach us through thegoodblog.com, and please go to the Open to Hope website, sign up for our newsletter, and become a part of our Open to Hope family. Please stay tuned for more.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hello, this is Dr. Heidi Horsley, host of Healing the Grieving Heart. Have you lost meaning and purpose in your life since your loved one died? Does each day feel like an effort? You do not have to go through this difficult time alone. As a bereaved sibling and licensed psychologist with over 15 years' experience, I will work with you in a collaborative, supportive way. If you live in the New York tri-state area, you can contact me at 917-338-6396 or email me at drheidihorsley@gmail.com. That's drheidihorsley@gmail.com. To learn more about my private practice, visit my website at www.drheidihorsley.com. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Neil Chethick. I'm the executive editor for the Open to Hope Foundation and author of the book Father Lost, How Sons Deal with the Death of Their Dad. As editor of the foundation, it's my job to find writers for our website, writers who would like to contribute their articles, poetry, and personal stories about grief, loss, hope, and recovery. If you'd like to write for our website, please contact me. You can do that by visiting opentohope.com and click on the category Write for Us. Then you can start bringing your words, your stories, to our fast-growing audience around the world.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us, we're talking today about finding hope after suicide, and our second guests are Joanne Harple and Dr. Paula Clayton. Dr. Paula Clayton is the medical director of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Joanne Harple is the director of survivor initiatives for the foundation and is a survivor of her brother Stephen's suicide in 1993. Welcome to the show, Paula, Joanne, and welcome back, Gloria.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks, Hyde. Well, it's good to have you on the show, Joanne and Paula. Can we call you? I know where you're doctor. Should we call you Dr. Paula or Paula?
Just Paula is fine. Thanks.
Okay. All right. It's wonderful. I like this combination that you have, having a doctor on, and then Joanne, your brother. What do you call yourself? A suicide survivor?
Exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. And so we're going to take both perspectives on it. Heidi has a little bit of connect with your organization because, Heidi, didn't you go to the big event a couple of years ago?
I did. I went to the event, and you guys may have been there, in 2008 at the American Museum of Natural History here in Manhattan, and Eric Hipple won the Lifetime Achievement Award then, and it was an amazing event, and there was incredible people there that were really trying to make a difference in the world.
Right, right. Yeah. It's an annual event, so.
Right.
And when are you having it this year?
It will be in May. It probably will not be at the Museum of Natural History, but another, I'm sure, notable place. And it's our big fundraising event, dinner event, celebration, sort of.
Well, we want to start out the show a little bit by having Joanne talk about Stephen. Is it Stephen?
It is.
Uh-huh. Want to tell us a little bit about him? And you were telling me that he died by suicide 16 years ago?
He did. My younger brother was 26 years old. He was an honors graduate of Yale University and a Harvard Law School graduate. He was married to his college sweetheart. He had just started a job as a tax attorney at a large corporate law firm in San Francisco. Had no prior history of mental health problems at all, was by any measure of success in life doing extremely well, and as an adult developed bipolar disorder. And although we took him to a whole series of doctors and he was hospitalized multiple times and we tried very hard to get him the best medical care we could, he took his own life about a year after being diagnosed.
Wow. Now, Paula, is that kind of, do you hear that a lot, that families have been trying to help these people?
Oh, yes, certainly. 90% of people who die by suicide have a mental disorder. Mm-hmm. And I would think half of them have had care of some sort. Some of it is continuous and good care, but it obviously it wasn't perfect, and many others start care and are given either psychotherapy or medication and then stop it and then take their lives, whereas there are a whole another set of people who, without any previous awareness that they have a mental disorder, die by suicide. They're mainly people who are depressed but don't realize that depression can be fatal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a San Franciscan, so I know we, you know, have been talking a lot about barriers at the Golden Gate Bridge, and, you know, I have a couple of people that I know in the last 2 years have jumped off the bridge.
Well, they're seeing that if you have barriers, oftentimes when people are going to jump or going to kill themselves, if there's a barrier, they often, you know, they won't do it, and they often sometimes they don't even go back and try to do it at all.
Right. Oh, no, there's very good. We certainly have been staunch supporters of barriers on the on the bridge, and there's very good data that shows that in several different states and countries that if you put up barriers that people don't jump off that bridge and they don't go to the neighboring bridges.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an impulsive act in a certain number of people that is thwarted, and then the barriers, of course, do another thing, and that is sometimes they allow, a net will allow for those people to be taken to care, which is also a very important step in the whole process.
Right. Well, Joanne, how did Stephen take his life?
He shot himself.
And we were looking at some of the statistics that this is one of the major ways of dying by suicide now, right?
It is increasingly for women as well. What was ironic, of course, in my brother's situation is that he had never been even active in sports particularly. He had no of those sort of stereotypical male aggression kinds of qualities. He was sort of a philosopher by nature, and so the idea that he would die by such a violent means was so out of character for him, and therefore so indicative of how ill he was.
You know, I'm so impressed that you're doing things for people after the suicide, because I think there's so much that goes on where there's no help after
the families. You're right. I mean, because suicide is still so stigmatized, so many people, when they lose a loved one to suicide, don't know anyone else who's ever been through this experience. Or they may know people but don't realize that those people have had some experience with suicide, because it's not something that people are particularly open about. And so one of our goals at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention is to not only provide support and information, but to do it in the context of bringing these issues out into the open and destigmatizing them.
Joanne is the director of suicide initiatives for the foundation, and we have a general mission that involves research and education and advocacy, but also support for people with mental disorders and support for people who've lost someone to suicide. And she really plans all these programs, which you should have her tell you about.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joanne, I wanted to ask you, I wanted to say now, I live in Palo Alto, California, and we in the past 6 months have had two high school kids step in front of trains, Caltrain.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. I actually have cousins who went to Gunn High School, so
I'm following that very closely.
Yeah.
So here I am. What would you suggest, not necessarily to those specific families, but here I am, many people that are listening to this show right now are newly bereaved with a suicide. What would you say to me?
Well, there are several things. First of all, to know that you're not alone. That what the research shows is that during the course of our lifetime, about 85% of us will lose someone that we know to suicide. Of that, a little over 20% will lose a family member, and about 60% will lose someone that they know personally. So, sadly, it's much more common than we realize, again, because it's not something that people talk about particularly openly. The second is to reiterate a point that Paula made a couple of moments ago, which is that what we know, again, from the research is that more than 90% of people who take their own lives have some kind of underlying psychiatric illness at the time of their death, whether that's depression or bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, substance abuse, or some combination. Not always diagnosed, of course. And that's the key, is that without adequate diagnosis and treatment, these illnesses can be fatal, and in some cases are. But the reason that's important for survivors to remember is that because so many survivors are plagued by such a sense of guilt and responsibility, mm-hmm. and agonizing over what they could have done differently or what they should have said, and so to keep in mind that someone who takes their own life is dying from an illness the same way someone could die of heart disease or cancer dies of an illness. And to take away that sense of guilt and responsibility from the survivors and let them grieve their loss without beating themselves up that they were somehow to blame.
You know, part of the problem, I think, and I don't know how you can log in on this, is that the mental health community is not clued into this. A lot of therapists still look to the family to find out what happened.
And the family, in turn, is looking to the therapist.
Well, some people aren't even in therapy.
Exactly.
A kid step out, and then people say, well, what's wrong with that family? You know, it must have been something going on. Do you have any thoughts on that, Heidi?
I think you're right. I think society in general will look and say, okay, what was really going on behind closed doors? And the bottom line is, like you're pointing out, this is a mental illness. People have mental illness, and we need to realize that. And I think it's scary for people to realize that it could happen to anybody. You want to think, okay, something happened behind closed doors that we don't know about. You know, people. So that's all I would say about it. I don't know. If you guys want to add something.
Yeah, well, in the old days, when I was a family therapist, a while back, they used to say, if somebody kills himself, somebody in the family is giving them that message. That's how bad it was.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Well, and I think what's so sad is that even though as a society we may be getting better about articulating that kind of blame, survivors blame themselves. And so a lot of that stigma is imposed on the survivors to themselves, that they believe that somehow this is their fault. And it's so heartbreaking, because the survivors are grieving a loss, and mm-hmm. every family has arguments and every relationship has difficulties, and it doesn't mean that because you had a fight with someone and that afternoon they killed themselves that you caused them to do it.
So what do I say? Here I am. I'm newly bereaved. My child died by suicide. How do I deal with it? I mean, you know, what do I say to people when they say, well, what happened to your child? Or is that hard for survivors?
It's hard for many survivors, and what we really encourage people to do is stick with simple truths and to say, to use the language, you know, my son or daughter died by suicide or took his or her own life, or my son or daughter was extremely depressed and tragically ended up taking his or her own life, to frame it in terms of the depression or whatever the illness was. But not to feel compelled to come up with some other story about what happened, because lying about it just reinforces to the survivor and to everyone else that there's some reason to be ashamed, and there's no reason to be ashamed at all.
Mm-hmm. And you want to also, though, that they can also go to our website. There are many support other ways you can reach out, right, Joanne?
There are our website, which is www.afsp.org. has, among other things, a directory of all of the support groups around the country that we know about. There are close to 500 of them.
And you do a lot of wonderful training.
Well, we thank you. We feel very strongly that a lot of people who want to run support groups, although they're very well-meaning, have had no training and really are interested in finding out the very best, most effective ways to run support groups for survivors, whether they're lay people or mental health professionals. And so we run a training program that we offer about half a dozen times throughout the year in different cities to train both lay people and professionals on how to run a support group for survivors. And all of that information is also on our website, which is afsp.org.
Yeah. Now, what if I want to run a support group? You know, how far out is there a time? Like, I run a compassionate friends group for people who have lost children, which suicide people, you know, come into, too. But we say 18 months before you can start leading a group. Do you have any time limits like that?
We do. Our recommendation is actually 2 years. Mm-hmm. So in order for someone to attend our training, we require that they be 2 years from their loss. Of course, the groups themselves are not run through AFSP. They're run independently. And so there certainly may be instances of individuals who are starting groups sooner than that. But we find that about 2 years is a fair approximation. You know, certainly there are people who are ready sooner than that, and there are some people who 5 years after the loss are still not in the right place in terms of their own healing to run a group. But that's our best recommendation.
Well, Paula, I wanted to ask you as a physician, do you have any thoughts on medication or health, or what are your recommendations?
Oh, well, I mean, it really depends on the illness, but certainly for depression, we've just finished a great film for teaching high school students about depression. It's a 26-minute film, and we have a facilitator guide. And in that film for high school students, we show the different faces of depression, anxiety, just out-of-the-blue depression, using drugs and alcohol, and then bullying. And in all those cases, they go into therapy. And in two of the cases, when the therapy doesn't seem to be relieving the symptoms, they also take medication.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the best route for treatment is either through therapy or a referral for treatment through your primary care or pediatrician.
Are you worried about other family members after and friends after a suicide?
Oh, certainly. I mean, the group of people who grieve after a suicide can be enormous. I mean, Joanne's involved in writing postvention for schools, because schools continually ask us, you know, how should we handle this in the school setting, where it affects enormous numbers of kids as well as the parents and the teachers.
Well, so people are worried that if you talk about suicide openly, people will do it. Do you
yes.
see that
well,
as an
that's
issue
a good,
when you talk to the schools?
Right. Well, that's why there are two schools of thought on that.
You know, let's take a break, because this is an important topic, and we've got to go to break right now. And I want to spend some time talking about this fear. It's time for our break. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley. I'm with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. We're talking to Joanne Harpel and Dr. Paula Clayton from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And we're talking about finding hope after suicide. You can reach us through our blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the Open to Hope Foundation. Please stay tuned for more.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Hello, I'm Eric Kipple, former quarterback of the Detroit Lions and outreach coordinator of the University of Michigan Depression Center. It gives me great pleasure to announce the publication of my autobiography, Real Men Do Cry, a quarterback's inspiring story of tackling depression and surviving suicide loss, written with Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley, and published by Quality of Life. Real Men Do Cry takes you on my journey of fame and fortune to unbearable pain and depression following the death of my 15-year-old son, Jeff, and gives practical information on the warning signs and risks of depression. My story ends with an uplifting message of hope and recovery. I have faith that if I have made it, you can too. You can visit my website to learn more about my book at erickhipple.com and more about depression on depressioncenter.org. Thank you.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi for our final segment of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who have suffered the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, we are talking about finding hope after suicide with our guests, Joanne Harpel and Dr. Paula Clayton of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Welcome back to the show, Joanne, Paula, and Gloria.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, we're back. When we went to break, we were just hitting on what I consider to be an extremely important topic, so I wanted to pick up on that again. I think, were you the one that was talking about it, Paula? I don't know,
yes,
whichever
yes.
one. But the subject we were bringing up and Heidi brought up is people think that if you talk about suicide, then people will do it.
Well, it's a complicated question. Certainly, there are good data that show if you ask about suicide, it does not cause other people to think about suicide, especially, the data come, though, even from school systems where they did ask the questions and then came back and asked them again. And those who were asked actually had better scores the next time on these distress symptoms than those who weren't asked the first time. And there was nobody that, it didn't expand the second time when they'd been asked before. In general, however, so we encourage everyone, if you're concerned about suicide, if there's something the person does, no matter what their age, and it makes you think about suicide, you should ask that person on an individual level. And depending on the answers, do you wish you were dead? Are you thinking about harming yourself? Have you thought of a way? And depending on those answers, you really need to get someone in to help if they're clearly suicidal when you ask them. We also, however, believe that the way newspapers handle suicide and especially glamorizing it and showing the method, et cetera, may actually produce contagion. And that, too, is a real fact. So that if a suicide occurs, like on a railroad track, and it's advertised on the front page or reported on the front page, that can cause contagion.
Mm-hmm.
One last thing, in high schools, then our board, advisory board, felt that we did not want to make a program that concentrated on suicide, since the most common illness that ends in suicide is depression. They thought the best way to actually prevent suicide was to teach teachers and students what depression looks like and how to get treatment.
Right. Well, I think it's great, and we focus a bit on those young folks, but I've been looking at some of the suicide statistics on your site, and it's very interesting to go to the site. Give us your site again.
It's www.AFSPsuicidePreventionorg. AFSP.org.
It's a fountain of information, and I want to say that one thing I found interesting is the how much depression there is among women, and also that some of the highest suicide risks are with older men too, people who get cut off socially. So I think it's important to know that they're out there too.
Right.
Yeah, and that you're there for them with groups and that kind of thing.
Exactly. You know, again, although we do offer training for people who are running groups, the groups themselves are all operated independently. So we have a directory on our website of every group in the country that we've ever heard of. There are almost 500 groups throughout the country. There are also many groups online because we do realize that going to a support group is not right for everyone, whether it's because they're not comfortable in a group setting or because the group meets on a day and time that they're not available or it's too far away from them geographically, which is a particular problem for people who live in rural areas, so that there are also some excellent groups that meet in cyberspace that are very good and run by people that we know well and really trust.
That's great. Well, before we close the show, I wondered if you could each give us some of your thoughts. Joanne, if you could talk a little bit as a survivor of suicide to those folks out there, giving them hope and telling them how you've gotten through?
Sure. I actually, very much by accident, but very fortuitously, found out about an event about 6 weeks after my brother died. It was called National Survivors of Suicide Day. And it turns out that that's a day that was created by resolution of the United States Senate. Senator Harry Reid of Nevada lost his father to suicide. And he created a national day every year on the Saturday before Thanksgiving for survivors of suicide loss. There's information about that day on our website. It takes place every year. And what happens on that day is that there are conferences in 200 cities around the country and increasingly internationally where survivors can go and spend the day getting information and support and meeting other survivors. And that program is also available on our website because, again, we know that not everyone can attend a program on a particular day or there may not be a conference near to them. So, again, AFSP.org has information about all of those conferences, and the program from last year is on the web available for viewing 24 hours a day free of charge. So, for me, an event like that created an opportunity to feel that I wasn't alone and to realize that there was a whole community of people out there who looked like me and were just as bewildered as me and just as sad and struggling with just as many questions, but they could find hope and support and strength in one another.
And, you know, I think eventually, I don't know, I've noticed with Compassionate Friends that eventually it doesn't really matter how they died. We miss them like mad.
Of course. You know, this is someone that you loved and felt close to, and there's no such thing as a magical day when there's closure or when you no longer think about them or care about them. But what we do find is that for most survivors, they're able to integrate the loss into their lives. They're able to reorganize their lives in a way that still have meaning and still have a future, but that you carry that loss with you and you integrate it into who you are.
That's great. Well, thank you, John. You certainly have, and what wonderful work you're doing. Paula, do you have a last comment you want to make for our folks out there?
I just want to say that we are, besides our educational, I mean, besides our research, we're very involved in education, and that's for both physicians and the healthcare community as well as the general public. So we have this new film on teen depression. We'll have a teacher's guide on suicide prevention. We just did a program yet this week that's not ready yet. It will be on our web on just depression and depression awareness. And we have patients speaking about their own illnesses on it. So I think our website is really a resource for all sorts of ways to learn and help, to reach out and to educate yourself so that you can offer hope.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, both of you. It's been a great show, and what a great service you're doing. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
It's time to close our show, and I want to thank our guests, Matt Kuntz, Joanne Harpel, and Dr. Paula Clayton. Please stay tuned again next week when our topic will be Understanding Life After Loss, and our guest will be Kimberly Rose Carolla, author of Walking Through the Valley of the Shadow of Death, and Fern Stuart Welch and Rose Winters. They co-authored a book, Tea with Elizabeth, which honors death and dying icon Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. These shows are archived on our blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the Compassionate Friends website. So we want to remind you to send us in an email, and we will send you an Eric Hippel book or a CD. Remember that others have been there before you and made it. You can, too. You need not walk alone. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host.
And I'm Heidi Horsley. Matt, Joanne, and Paula, thanks for all you do to help people find hope again after suicide.
Thank you. Thanks.
You have been listening to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley on Healing the Grieving Heart, heard live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on health.voiceamerica.com and worldtalkradio.com. Healing the Grieving Heart is archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. Tune in again next week, and thanks for listening.